Welcome to Health Matters, the Mental Health Edition. I'm your host, Dr. Mark Vegan, psychologist, along with my co-host, Shelley Visconti, counselor and marriage and family therapist. This evening, we're going to be talking about homelessness. Red River Radio aired the national broadcast for the Homelessness Marathon this month. And so we wanted to follow up with homelessness in our area. And so we've brought in some guests and some experts to talk about the concept and the phenomena, I guess, of homelessness. Our number here at Red River Radio is 1-800-552-8502. We, as usual, invite all of you, our listeners, to become part of our conversation. Call in with your questions, your comments, anything that you want to contribute. We welcome all of you, our listeners. Tonight, we have three guests with us. We have Reverend Henry Martin, who is the executive director of the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission. Reverend Martin, welcome to you.
Thank you, Mark.
We also have Jen Stringfellow, who is also with the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission. Welcome.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
And in addition, we have Simone Hennessy, and many of you will know her from her work in the Providence House. Simone, welcome to you.
Thank you.
I guess I'd like to start, Reverend Martin, Reverend Henry Martin, with you. Can you kind of just give a brief sketch of who you are and what the role and mission of the rescue mission is?
Thank you. I'd be glad to. I'm a minister, ordained licensed minister. I'm a former missionary to Honduras, Central America, and came to Shreveport in 1987 and started the ministry, working in the ministry at the rescue mission in 1988. The rescue mission is a homeless facility that has been organized to pursue the passion of Jesus Christ, lifting up the homeless, the hungry, the addicted, and the abused. And we've been doing that quite well for a number of years. We are a distinctively Christian organization, and we're glad that we can be on this radio show today with you, Mark.
Glad to have you. Let me just ask you a quick question. Do you have to be a Christian to be part of the rescue mission?
No, you don't. You don't have to be a Christian to be part of the rescue mission. But we hope if you are part of the rescue mission and leave, that you will be when you leave.
Okay. Simone, can you tell us about yourself and your roots in Shreveport and so on, and tell us a little bit about the Providence House?
Yes. My husband was a Presbyterian minister. He passed away about 10 years ago, and so I come into this ministry as a sense of call and vocation. We came here in late 1991. And rather than going back in the for-profit arena that I was in, as a Presbyterian, we're pretty well connected, and I'd served in many capacities in our presbytery. And some folks knew me and knew I was looking in the nonprofit arena and called me. And so I started in 1992 at Providence House, and we had just finished working with the Salvation Army, who had been running that particular program, and they no longer could afford to do that. And so we stepped in, and we started with three employees, $115,000, 25 families with children, and no program. And we began at that time to begin to think about and look at long-term solutions to the issues of homelessness, specifically for families with children. And we chose families with children primarily because when families became homeless, typically what would happen is the dad would go to the rescue mission, the mother would go to the Salvation Army, and the children were farmed out. And this was a critical issue, and we felt especially in those tragic, very difficult times, the family being together was extremely important. And even so today, in many areas, there are very few shelters for families with children.
Okay. Jen, tell us about you, and how did you get connected with the rescue mission?
I
I began with the rescue mission shortly after they opened the facility for the women and children. It's been a calling all of my life to work with people and help them. I'm the head of social services. I work with all the women and the children. I'm also a liaison with all the hospitals and law enforcement. I get them in contact with whatever facilities they need help from besides us out in the community. And we also have a wonderful women's program. I do teach several classes there. But it had been my calling most of my life to help people that were less fortunate and that needed to have some things done for them so they can make a new start in their lives.
I know this is a big question, but and I just don't know the answer. Can the three of you kind of tell me what the size and scope of each of your programs is right now?
Well, for Providence House, we serve 75 families with children every day. We are the largest residential development center for homeless families in the state of Louisiana and have the only child development center for homeless children in Louisiana. And so we roughly serve close to 600 to 700 people every year, with the majority being children.
So you have 75 there at your facility right now, and their families.
Their families. They are really in two different locations. One is in our main building that houses 27 families with children. That is really the beginning point. Then we have about 50 or so apartments in Shreveport and Bossier that they move to when we feel like they have kind of gotten their feet on the ground. And they go into those apartments, we furnish them, and they continue to work the program until they're ready to actually graduate to independent living.
Okay, now you're telling me that you have a child development center.
Yes.
Can you explain to our listeners what that means?
Well, the child development centers is, without it, literally, we could not run the program to help family reach their highest level of self-sufficiency. Child care is one of the key areas. I think there's a trinity of issues around homelessness: a lack of affordable child care, lack of public transportation, lack of affordable housing, and then, of course, education. But the child care is absolutely critical, and that's why we see, I think, so many people today in poverty is the lack of available affordable child care. Without that, it's very difficult for anyone really to get on their feet.
Okay, again, I invite our listeners to call in at 1-800-552-8502 if you have questions or comments or suggestions or criticisms, whatever you would like, join our conversation. But let me ask the same question to the two of you that run the rescue mission. Give me a sense of the size and scope and who you serve and how many you serve, et cetera.
On the women's side right now, we have approximately 60 women and 11 families, and those families have between 1 and 4 children. We have a program that we offer on the women's side that allows them, it's our Women's Discipleship Training Program. It allows them to learn the skills they need to have to go out in the world when they leave us and be productive. We also provide them with opportunities when they leave. We will help them find jobs. We get them with organizations that can help them go back to school. Also, they don't have to leave after the 12 months. It is a 12-month program. They don't have to just leave when they graduate. They can stay up to 6 to 9 more months after they finish, as long as they are going to school or working or both. They're doing something to help them move forward.
So it, too, is a residential program.
Right.
Okay. Henry, did you want to say anything about the men's side?
Sure, I'd be glad to. Mark, on the men's side, we have approximately 70 beds for men at McNeil Street, uh-huh. The same location where the women and children are, but they're divided. And then we have a 12-month rehab program for the men, Christian Rehabilitation Program. They start the first 30 days on McNeil Street, and if they graduate that 30 days, they will go to our facility out in Greenwood, and it's called Zion Ridge. We have room for 24 men there with 2 house dorm parents, which would be 26 in that program. And then in our old mission on Texas Avenue, we have 40 apartments available for men who have graduated program, who are independently working with gainful employment and giving back to the community. So we have in all probably 180 so, or maybe 200 beds that are available.
You know, our listeners, more likely than not, are not homeless. And most of the men and women who are living on the streets today and are homeless are not listening to us right now.
That's right.
So my question to the three of you is, for our listeners, if they know of or have contact or are trying themselves to help people who are homeless, how do these people, our listeners, get in contact with the Rescue Mission or Providence House?
Well, for Providence House, we certainly are on have our own website, which is theprovidencehouse.com. Also, our phone number is in there, and we receive a lot of calls from the public and for people that are homeless. But I strongly suggest that anybody who knows someone that is homeless or knows a family that is homeless is that referring them to us directly, because we understand their situation. And a lot of times people just want to provide a meal, which is helpful. However, homelessness has a lot of different issues around it that has to be addressed. And it's just not one thing. It's seven or eight things typically. And so looking at long-term solutions for us is critical.
Mark, for the Rescue Mission, we too have a website at www.sbrescuemission.com. They can also pick the phone up and call 318-227-2868.
Say the number again.
Area code 318-227-2868.
Okay.
And that call will be directed to the appropriate people. We have a variety of networking organizations in the community. The Community of Faith is a great big network for us through churches and different organizations. And then just by word of mouth, people hear what we do. And then Jen can tell you more about how that we get homeless women and children in other than these ways, and sometimes through different organizations.
Exactly.
Jen, do you want to comment?
Yes, a lot of times we'll get women into the mission with their children, or even as single women coming from other churches will call us and say that they have somebody, and we'll tell them to send them over, and they'll come over and interview and get in, you know, in the mission either as a single or as a family. We also have the police will bring people over there. The hospitals, when they're getting ready to release people, they will call me and send me, you know, documentation of what's going on with this person and see if we can take them. And it will depend on their medical needs, whether or not we can accommodate them, but we accommodate just as many as we possibly can.
So the police bring people, the
yes.
churches refer people. Mm-hmm. And the hospitals refer
right.
people.
And individuals, too.
And individuals, okay.
Individuals. We'll have people that will have somebody at work that's become homeless. Like mm-hmm. you say, they're working,
exactly.
but they're still homeless. And they'll call yeah. and say, can she please come there? And I'll say, yes, you know, she can come on.
Shelley, let me invite you. You know what a big mouth I have. So it's hard to get a word in edgewise. So don't let me... if you have ideas and thoughts, please.
Yeah, actually, a good point was brought up when I was researching this topic, preparing for this show. I was kind of surprised to hear that about 15% of homeless people are actually employed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do y'all find that that is the case here in Shreveport also?
Yes.
Yes. Part of our program, in order to graduate to your highest level of self-sufficiency, they have to be working full-time. But I can also say that the centerpiece of our program is education. And I will also say that homelessness is about a lack of affordable rental property and other property, but it's equally about economics. Without education, or with education, They are able then to make a living wage. And so education in every way, shape, and form for us is the most important thing we do. We have a program called Working to Learn, which is a full-time job, working full-time on their education as we link them then into that next level, whether it's VOTEC or Bossier Community College or LSUS. And so to us, education, whether it's child care or the adult, is the most critical thing we do.
And we have a similar type of program with our ladies because we will help them get their GED while they're there. A lot of them come in without the basic education. We will help them get their GED while they're in the program. And then we will get them with facilities that will help them get into, like, say, VOTEC or community college or wherever they want to go for job training once they leave the mission.
You know, as a psychologist, I run into homeless people my work, and Shelley, your
yes.
work with the court system.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because so often men and women get into trouble and are picked up by the police and are charged usually with some kind of mindless crime, if you will. And
right.
It can be a simple property crime or, some kind of
vagrancy or something like that.
And so often the courts will refer these folks to us because the court wants to know, are they competent to stand mm-hmm. trial? Mm-hmm. And of course, many of the people that the courts do refer are mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a public policy question of, you know, to what extent do we provide medical and hospital and residential care for men and women who have severe mental illnesses, who may not be gravely disabled, who may not be a danger to somebody else, who may not be a danger to themselves,
mm-hmm.
but who yet, because of the illness, are not able to manage sufficiently their own lives.
That's a great point, talking about the mental illness. If I could revert just for a minute, go back to the 15% of the homeless that are working homeless, that are employed. We found over the years, we have a work program at the Rescue Mission. That's one other program we have.
Mm-hmm.
And we give, on the men's side, we give them opportunity that they come to the mission, say, I just need a job. We want to afford them the opportunity to get a job. But what we found, more than not, is that the working homeless are a couple of paychecks away from losing their job. And that being because about 98% of the people that come to the Rescue Mission are addicted to something, drugs or alcohol. And coupled with mental illness, that makes holding a job a lot more difficult. Now, we provide the food, the clothing, the shelter, the soap, the clothes, and those kind of things. But when a person is truly addicted, they're going to be working to support that habit. And so the working population, many times that's a two-edged sword, because money is not always the best answer and solution for homeless people.
So it sounds like money and treatment and education and just many prongs to the approach to solving this problem.
You're exactly right.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this question, and this is just because I'm ignorant on this subject. I told you that I see homeless people as a result of court referrals.
Exactly.
But do you have an estimate or an understanding of the extent of the homelessness problem in the Ark-La-Tets, like Shreveport, Bossier, Minden, all the way down to Lufkin and our whole listening area? I don't have a sense of that.
Well, I think that we're very fortunate in Shreveport and Bossier because you don't see the homeless living on the streets in many cases like you do in many other suburban, huge metropolitan areas. And I think that's because of folks like the Rescue Mission and Providence House and so many other organizations that work to keep them off the street. And so a lot of times people think, well, we just don't have a problem. But that's because there are many out there doing really good work trying to keep them off the street. I would also like to mention Hope for the Homeless, which is a homeless coalition here locally that works with all of us and does referrals and primarily works with the chronically homeless and those who are on the street, primarily single folks, and they do a lot of referrals. We work with them as well.
Okay. Any other ideas about the scope of... And so you're sort of saying because there are many agencies working, it's sort of an unseen problem in Shreveport, Bossier, and the surrounding areas.
Exactly. But even so, last year we turned away 294 families with children.
Wow.
And they are living somewhere. We're not sure where. Sometimes under a bridge, in their cars, doubled up, living with other people. And the challenge for us is the lack of affordable rental property. Just that they can afford.
You know, there are point in time surveys taken among the communities where homeless people live, and I think the latest statistics that we have in Shreveport and Bossier area is about 4,500 homeless
people in a
12-month period of time.
Now that's just like Caddo Parish and Bossier Parish.
Yes,
and you're saying
about 4,500 that we can count. That's not the ones we can't count. That's not the ones that are living, the younger people that are living with grandmother and grandpa whose parents have abandoned them. So there's a tremendous homeless population, even though it's not seen every day, there's a tremendous homeless population in this area. When you talk about going all the way down to Lufkin in those areas, I think in the state of Louisiana a few years ago, there were 75,000 homeless people that the state of Louisiana identified, and that was only the ones they could count. So we do have a big homeless population in this area.
So Louisiana is 4.5 million people, 75,000 are homeless. Is that what you're saying?
Well, that was a few years ago, and homelessness has been on the increase.
Well, and even as someone who comes in contact with the homeless, that is shocking. That's shocking that so many people, you know, and I interact with people who are homeless, and I'm shocked that there are that many people that need services.
Absolutely. And, you know, we serve children and families because we know one thing about the children, they're going to grow up to be just like their parents for good or for ill. And so I think we have to work with a sense of urgency to change what the parent knows and be able to kind of raise them up to a higher level. And then in turn, those children are impacted by that kind of improvement. So it becomes generational if we can make those significant changes.
Let me just ask this question real quickly. Do you have a sense that living where we live, and our listening area is down to Natchitoches and almost over to Monroe and, you know, East Texas and so on, do we have a higher level of homelessness here in our area than other parts of the country, or where do we stand? Or do you have an idea about that?
Well, we certainly can't be compared with places like Dallas and New York, and because proportionately they obviously have a greater homeless population. But in cities about our size, we're probably about the same range as everybody else.
Again, we ask our listeners to call in with your ideas, your thoughts, your opinions, 1-800-552-8502 here on redriverradio.org. Anything else that you all wanted to add on what we've talked about so far? Because I was going to ask the why question next.
Let me add something real quick. It's just something I wanted to touch on, is that with our children, one of the things when the families, and I'm sure Simone and everybody that's worked with them, when families are displaced from their homes and they're in that situation, the children suffer a lot of trauma, not just because they have... you know, have lost their homes, but because of the trauma of all of it. So I know one thing we do is when they come to us, of course, if their children are in school, I work with the school board in Caddo and Bossier, and we try to keep those kids in their regular school.
I think we have a question, Shelley. Is that true?
Yes, we have Jean from Shreveport. Go ahead, Jean.
Thank you for taking the call. My question is, when it is identified amongst your clients that there is a drug and or alcohol problem, what is the methodology for helping them through this, or is it addressed, or how is it addressed, I guess I should
well,
say?
I can say for Providence House, those are some of the first things that we look at. I know that we drug test every family that comes in and random drug tests every week, including adolescents, if we need to. However, that does not keep them from coming into Providence House. What that does mean is that treatment becomes the very first thing that we do, because unless you can get that under control, nothing else will work for them. And so we do a lot of referrals to organizations that specialize in this, as well as we have counseling. But that is the very first thing that we do.
That's also the first thing that we do at the rescue mission when they are drug tested when they come in. And again, if they show up with a drug test is positive, that does not keep them from coming in the mission. And that is one of the first things we address also, because they've got to get some control over that addiction if they're going to be able to move forward with their lives.
Gene, thank you very much for your question. Henry, did you want to speak to
it? Well, I just wanted to say that'd be the same thing on the men's side at the rescue mission. And that's the only option they have. When they come in, they test positive for drugs. We know mm-hmm. they have a need, and we'll say, look, we want to help you. Sign up for our rehab program. 12 months later, you're going to be a new person.
Gene, do you have any further follow-up you want to add? Did we lose her?
No. I guess she's done.
Okay. All right. So I was going to go to the why question, and this, you know, we don't need to spend a lot of time on it, but why do people become homeless?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons for homelessness. So whether it's economic in wages, or whether it's domestic violence, or whether it's addictions, or whether it is that they're in trouble with the law, and it's never one. It's usually seven. And so, when they get to this point, I mean, they're at the very bottom rung of the ladder.
Okay. You know, I was going to say, a lot of times when they're homeless, we're dealing with it all. We're dealing with the domestic abuse that led to the addiction. There may be mental illness that goes into it. So generally when somebody gets to us, it's at that point, they're dealing with the whole ball of wax. They're not just dealing with one thing at a time that caused it.
There may be a rare case where someone becomes homeless overnight because of a fire that devastated their home and left them with no place to go or no family. And those are rare occasions, but there's a variety, like they said, of issues that are very complex issues that contribute to rendering a person homeless.
This is kind of a public policy question, and I don't want to get into the issue of politics and so on. But, you know, Shelley mentioned earlier that 15% of the homeless are employed and are working. And you spoke about that.
Right.
And one of the other things that I learned in preparing was that 89 hours, a person would have to work for 89 hours each week.
It takes an adult making $15 an hour to afford a two-bedroom at fair market rent. And so if you're making minimum wage, that means you're going to have to work two full-time jobs. Or, as we say, we really want to work on the education piece so they can increase that that's their option. For us, they have to either be working full-time or in full-time school. And ultimately, to finish the program, they have to be working. But education for us is the key factor. And for those who have the capacity to do better, we really try to motivate them by working on their GEDs and moving on to school.
You know, I was talking with Henry and Jen earlier about this before you came, Simone, and it's kind of a political and economic issue, and it's really a public policy issue, and that's the whole issue of a minimum wage.
Right.
People argue that, yes, we need a minimum wage. Other people argue, no, we don't. It's not the way to have an economy and so on. I don't want to get into that because I don't really know enough about that to speak about it. But what do you three bring to this discussion from your careers in working with homeless people regarding minimum wage versus living wage? I mean, I don't want to promote one side of that argument, but You are experts in homelessness. You work with homeless all the time. You have a perspective that most of us don't have. I'd be interested in your comments.
Well, I know with minimum wage, there's no way that a family can afford to have housing, to be able to pay the utilities, get their groceries, have child care. It's just not doable. Yeah,
well,
transportation.
The whole public transportation piece is a major issue for us in this area. A lot of times you'll have employers that pay a living wage, but we can't get them in there and back because of the lack of public transportation to some of the very, very best jobs. And so there are many, many issues.
Yeah, some of the public transportation doesn't go that far, and then others that they have good jobs, they're in an area where the buses don't run after a certain hour, they can't work the shifts they need to work, or they run every 2 hours on the weekends and it's hard for them to get there on time or be home before dark. So it does, transportation plays a tremendous role in all of this.
I would agree with what Simone and Jen have said. We do need to have a living wage. Now, that's going to be a different wage for different families and different people. And I also understand the dilemma that the employer is in. They're in business to make money. Yet, if you have an employee that's a good employee, say a certified welder, a certified welder can start at $18 an hour anywhere. But if they don't have a vehicle to get them there or a bus line that will take them there, then they can't take that job. So transportation is a big issue, the living wage, and that's a really tough topic for us to talk about because that's something that's very political, like you said. But when it boils down to it, people need what they need in order to make a living.
Well, and if I could add to that, I mean, we have a good jobs here in Shreveport, but we have a whole population, homeless included, and those living in poverty that don't have the skill set to get those jobs. And so, you know, I always go back to education at being in job demand areas that pay a living wage. And so that's a challenge, but certainly minimum wage at the level it's at is not sustainable for a family.
Again, I invite our listeners to call in with your comments, your questions. We'll even entertain a political and economic question if you have that.
And we have another question.
Okay, go ahead.
We have a caller from Central Louisiana who is getting involved with the CINLA Coalition for the Homeless. And the caller would like to know, can you talk a little bit about people who might choose to be homeless? Do people choose to be homeless? Is that a thing?
I can speak for families, and I don't know one family that would choose to be homeless, to be quite honest. And maybe it's because I think it's more difficult with single people because they don't have the anchoring of children. But for families, I don't know of any. I've never met any. And I've served 5,000 or so families in 20-some-odd years that have ever chosen to be in this situation.
I can speak on behalf of some of the single men and single women. There are a minority of homeless people that choose that lifestyle. And I found out why they choose that lifestyle. We have them in Shreveport. Number one, they don't have any responsibility to anybody for anything. They don't have to go to work. They don't have to pay rent. They don't have to pay electric bills, and they can visit different places and get some of their needs met. But if you think about it for any length of time and get to interview and talk to these people, a lot of them are mentally ill. And if a person's mentally ill and they're not on proper medications, then they're going to choose things that are not right or not good.
Sure.
So yes, there are some people in our community that have chosen, rather than come into the rescue mission or some other facility and get their life right, they'd rather get a handout and come in only when necessary, but have the freedom to do what they choose to do. And I hate to say that, but that's just the truth.
The caller also had a question about rehoming the homeless. I've never heard of that
about
term
what?
Before. Rehoming the homeless? What is that?
I am not sure, but I would think it's like rapid rehousing, which is kind of a term people use today, which means that you get them into housing first or a housing first model. They begin their work already in permanent housing. But that's the only one that I am familiar with.
I know the Hope Coalition works with that, getting them into their housing first. And I have no idea how successful it is, you know, whether it is or isn't.
You know, we were talking about mental illness, and I think it's fair to say that probably 6 to 8%. Shelley, what's the, in general population?
About 6 or a little more. Yeah, about 6% or a little bit more in the general population.
That's a prevalence rate of people that suffer from
some type of diagnosable chronic mental illness.
6 to 8%.
Yeah. And of course, our system is such that there, you know, I don't know, 20, 30 years ago, we deinstitutionalized the mentally ill.
You are on my pet topic
okay.
right now.
And so there, you know, there's nowhere. And at the same time, they were talking, meaning the government was talking about, when we do this, we're going to build some local facilities to help address the issue. That has never happened. And I will tell you that unless you're going to harm yourself or somebody else, there's nowhere to go.
And you almost got to go ahead and do it before they'll help you. You got to harm yourself or somebody else.
And so this is a very, very serious issue. And I think we see it play out in the news every night, in the newspapers, where people just don't take their medication anymore, and there's no one to supervise and be sure that they're taken care of appropriately. And so harm comes to everyone.
Well, that's a pet topic for me, because when I moved here in 1975, Louisiana had one of the finest state mental health systems in the United States. I mean, it was something that Louisiana could really, really brag about. And I know that the hospital population at Pineville Central State Hospital was about 5,000 residents. And these were men and women who certainly had significant mental illness, but they were not gravely disabled. They were not a danger to other people, and they were not a danger to themselves, but they really could not manage their lives independently without some type of group supervision regarding housing and vocational productivity and so on. And that was a really excellent facility. And Louisiana had several other hospitals. One was in Mandeville. It was a very good hospital as well. And I thought that the state really served the mentally ill quite well. Then in my experience later on, when I worked on the Zoning Board of Appeals in Shreveport, we had homes in various neighborhoods that required special exception use from the Metropolitan Planning Commission and the Zoning Board of Appeals to house people who had various types of mental illness. And these people had heavily screened, particularly for drug and alcohol abuse, for a potential for violence against other people. And they lived well in the community in a supervised setting. And I don't think we have those homes anymore.
No, they don't exist anymore. There used to be a lot of group homes in this area, into Mansfield and other little towns around here, that you could send people to that needed that extra help. And now they've just disappeared. They don't exist anymore.
We have another caller, and I'll interrupt you to let the caller come in. Shelley?
Yes, we have Pete in Texas. Please go ahead with your question, Pete. Yes.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
I'm curious, what is a living wage? And by definition, it bothers me at some point, at some level. I mean, obviously, having food in the refrigerator seems to be, and electricity and water seem to be the things that you need, but is a 55-inch color TV you know, part of a living wage? And then on the other hand, I have people, as I'm an RN, and I have people that are just destitute and would love to have a refrigerator for food, and they're saying they can't get anything. But what is a living wage?
Well, I guess I can jump in here. I can tell you what it's not, maybe more than I can tell you what it is. For a single lady with two kids, it's not $7.35 an hour. And a living wage, in my mind, is something comparable to providing the needs for that family, whether it's $10 an hour, $12 an hour, depending on the size of the family. And I'm not advocating that the government needs to pass a minimum wage law to pay people $30 an hour. I'm not saying that at all. And I believe your comment about a 55-inch color TV certainly enters into the equation. But when it comes down to someone having milk in the refrigerator for the children, having a place for their children to go to daycare so that they can go to work, it's definitely more than $7.35 an hour.
Okay. Shelley, we have another questioner.
Yes, we do. We have Randy from Shreveport. Go right ahead, Randy.
Thank you so much for taking my call. And I haven't listened for the past few minutes, and so I apologize if this question is redundant. But I wanted to check with the folks to see if they have any outcomes data and if they have been able to analyze what determines the success of the program, and if they have a mechanism where the graduates or the success stories are able to come back and offer peer support to other homeless individuals.
Oh, what a great question.
I know. Yeah. At the mission, when we have our graduates, they've moved out and they've gone on to their jobs and are doing well, we do offer them an area to come back in and teach some of our classes, to give their testimonies, to let people know how they benefited from this, because some of the women don't really realize what's going to happen to them after they finish until they talk to these women that have already made it through and have actually changed their lives for the better.
I can tell you that when we started Providence House, one of the things that we did was really ask ourselves the question, what does it really take to help someone really get on their feet, a family, long term, and so they don't come back. And our program is really developed and designed to look at those tenets, and those tenets are what it takes for our families to graduate from the program. And as we say, reach their highest level of self-sufficiency. We have been tracking our graduates since 1993, and we just finished doing an update, which means we talk to the majority of our graduates every year since 1993. And our recent success rate is 95%. For those families that actually finish and graduate from the program. And so we think that's a very important part of what we do. It holds our feet to the fire, but it also makes our clients responsible to work that program and to do what is necessary, or they just can't stay.
Now, when you say 95% success, define success.
Success means that they are managing and living on their own, paying their own rent. They're drug-free and alcohol-free. Their children are in school full-time. For us, they have, say, 50% of their income. They've reached their highest level of education and have full-time employment as well as going through life skills. And ours is a two-year program, up to 2 years. And a lot of our families do stay that long because they want to buy a car. They want to save money. So it's not unusual. And we have two formal graduations every year. We have one coming up in March. I think we have about 8 families getting ready to graduate. That includes 17 children. And the impact, of course, on their children is phenomenal as we track that. But it's a hard program to work. But for those who finish it, they are solid.
Well, that's very impressive. Did you guys want
to? Well, yeah, Jen's already mentioned about the women's program. They have the opportunity to come back. And for the men, it's the same thing. We have we call it the Living Center down on Texas Avenue. And for people that graduate our program from Zion Ridge, the men's Christian rehab program, they come back and they start giving back immediately when we move them back to town. They give us 20 hours a week and they come and work in different aspects of our ministry. And then they're required to go out and search for a job. And they've been exposed to 12 months of life skills training, job training, how to get their do resumes, get online. A lot of them get into school. and a lot of them are in taking classes online. Some of them are going actually to schools, and we follow them as well, and we've seen a great success by doing that.
So do I understand this correctly? The Providence House program is 24 months.
Can be up to 24 months.
And the rescue mission program is 12 months?
It's 12 months, then we have an aftercare program, which would go for another 12 months.
And okay. I think one of the other things that we do is, as I said, we have our main building, which we shelter 27 families with children. And the best way I can explain what we do there, we're kind of like an emergency room in a hospital. That's where we do triage and do all of the assessments and try and get them on their feet. Once we can do that, then we move them into an apartment that we believe they can afford at graduation. And we transition those children into the child care centers and into the schools. We totally furnish the apartments with donated furniture. And when they're ready to graduate, we convert that lease to them, and they stay right there. And that, again, solidifies their ability to really stay on their feet, because part of what we know is every time we move, we kind of destabilize ourselves and have to get routines together, which is a very important part of what we do.
Randy, are you still on the line? Oh, I was going to ask him if he had a follow-up question, because that outcome question is a really good question.
Well, it is excellent.
Actually, we have a related question that was sent in about length of stay and homelessness. And does that vary for people with mental illness, or would that be the same no matter whether there's mental illness or substance abuse? The length of stay is going to be the same, or would that differ?
I think that it's really dependent on the person. I know our process, we really look holistically at a family and really looking at all areas, develop a plan that will move them out. And some it'll take 7 months, and some it'll take, 24 months as well. So it's really dependent upon their particular situation. And part of our philosophy is one size does not fit all. And so we really look at each individual case and help them develop a plan to move to independent living.
I know with a lot of our women that are in our program, that actually the ones that are suffering from mental illness tend to stay at least the same length as the ones that aren't and finish the program. And I think the reason for that is because for the first time in some of their lives, that they are having their medications monitored. We require that they go to their mental health appointments, and we really take care of that need to where it's not as much of an issue to cause them problems to cause them to leave and be homeless again. So we have a good rate of people that stay for the full time, mental illness or not.
I guess I want to ask you this question. I just don't know the answer. You were talking about medication management and so on. I mean, do the people that are actively involved in your programs who have some type of mental illness, do they have access to mental health counselors?
Oh, yes.
And to psychiatrists to monitor medications?
Yes. In fact, we require that they go to those appointments.
Okay.
And we do a lot of referrals. We do not, at Providence House, deal with the seriously mentally ill. We'll make a referral to someone who has more expertise than we do. However, part of the challenge is that the trauma of homelessness and the trauma that has happened in their life has to be dealt with. And we have a licensed professional counselor on staff, and the counseling piece is a very big piece of what we do. So whether it's individual, family, we do group counseling every week. All of those issues have to be addressed in a very holistic manner.
Well, and speaking of the trauma, I read some interesting statistics. 28% of families are homeless because of domestic violence. 63% of homeless women have experienced domestic violence. And about 44% of homeless youths have been physically abused. So that is a lot of trauma that's going on.
And I will say that is probably so normal, unfortunately. In a lot of cases, it's not what drives them to us, but it's what has driven them into homelessness ultimately.
I know that I'm on the board at Rutherford House, and I'll give a shout out to the excellent psychiatry help that we have. Dr. Stevens comes and donates a lot of his time and takes care. We have about 48 or so young boys and girls that are homeless and that are provided a very good educational, vocational, and housing transportation program at Rutherford House. And we have Dr. Lee Stevens does our psychiatric medication, and we have in-house counselors and so on. And I'm grateful to Dr. Stevens.
Absolutely.
Because of all that he does for us at Rutherford House. Again, we invite our listeners to call in 1-800-552-8502. I want to thank Randy for his excellent question about outcome data, and Pete as well for his question about living wage. That was an informative question.
Mark, you know, we're talking about the counselors are very vital in the work that we do among homeless people. The correct staff is very, very important and vital to the success. We are the family that the homeless person is living with at the time they're in our shelters. And to build the right support system in the shelter and when they get out of the shelter, have all of that in place for them to enter into independent living with a new approach, with a support system. We feel like that the community of faith is a vital link to the success of people leaving our programs. You got to have a support system. You got to have people that will stand with you through thick and thin. And I just want to applaud my staff for everything that they do at the Shreveport-Bossier Rescue Mission to help us bring people to independent living.
Well, let me just ask you a quick question about that. What size staffs do you have? And secondly, say a word about your funding.
Okay. We have approximately 50 people on staff, some part-time, but most of them full-time. Our funding comes strictly from churches, church groups, businesses and organizations and individuals. We have a $2.5 million budget a year, and we raise all that money. God is able to provide it for us, and we lift him up. He's a vital link to our success at the rescue mission, and I just appreciate everything that this community is doing to help us meet the needs of the least of these that come into the rescue mission.
What about Providence House?
We also have, I believe, 47 people on staff, mostly full-time. And I would echo what Reverend Martin says. Part of our responsibility is to create an environment that is conducive for change, that is positive, that is uplifting. And of course, we also are a ministry, and it is an important part of what we do. But how we act and how we behave and how we treat each other says everything to the clients, and creating that environment that is supportive and caring and more like a family is critical. And I would say that the majority of our staff, I would say probably 99%, it's a sense of call, as it is for me to be there.
Again, let me invite our listeners. We have only a few minutes. If you want to call in, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-552-8502. Without a call, I do want to ask about veterans and men and women who have served in Afghanistan, Iraq, maybe even before that in Vietnam. Talk to us a little bit about the men and women who may be veterans and who are homeless.
Okay, thank you, Mark. We do have our facilities open for veterans, and we thank God for them. They've given and laid it all down on the line for us. They're just as qualified as any other individual to come into our shelter and to receive our services. And I know a lot of the Vietnam veterans and the Desert Shield and the Desert Storm veterans and Iraq veterans and the Afghanistan, those people suffer from PTSD and end up homeless sometimes. But I thank God that we have agencies and facilities in town that can help them. And Jen can speak to the women's side of veterans.
We have, we have had several veterans that were female. And I have to say that have worked really hard and diligently with the VA. They've been very cooperative. They have other veterans agencies in Shreveport area that have really been good as far as helping the veterans find affordable housing. They've helped in every way they can, and anytime we've called on them, they've been there for them.
Well, you know, you were all talking about social support earlier, mm-hmm. and a lot of times, you know, in mental health, our treatment with mm-hmm. is very focused, like for post-traumatic stress disorder. You may want to target hyper-arousal or hyper-vigilance or traumatic memories and so on. And so the counseling and the treatment for that, the mental health, is just one small aspect. The social support,
absolutely.
The ability to connect with other people is so important in the treatment of post-traumatic stress disorder.
Well, and I can say that that our government has stepped up and put really money into that system. And I know the VOA, they spend the majority, a good portion. They have a whole veterans program that has expanded dramatically. And I applaud the work they're doing in that arena.
So what can you say regarding Providence House and treatment for veterans? And
well, and of course, we have had a number of women who are veterans. We do not see a whole lot, but the ones that do come in, we spend a lot of time doing referrals to the VA as well as VOA. Our job is to get them to the very best services that we possibly can, regardless of their situation. So, again, a lot of times we're doing referrals if we can't provide that service ourselves.
And I do have to say one thing real quickly about the VA. I know they're doing so much to try to improve their services for the veterans, but it cuts a lot of red tape when we refer them to them. It shortens their length of time that they have to wait for appointments, and they tend to get services a lot faster when they're referred from one of our agencies.
Comment on homelessness and the elderly.
We have seen an increase in the elderly over the last, I would say, 6 months, 6 to 8 months, Reverend Martin?
Oh, yeah. Well, on the women's side.
Particularly. Right, on the women's side particularly. And we have found that they're a very, very wonderful population to work with. They really are. They want to be self-sufficient, and we'll do anything we can to help them. We have a lot of areas we can call to get them some help.
Well, listen, I'm going to have to wrap this up, and I do want to thank Gene and Pete and Randy for their calls, and then Shelley, those two people that called in. You didn't give me names for them, but we want to thank them, or I think they sent text messages in, emails. And I want to thank Reverend Martin and Jen Stringfellow and Simone Hennessy. Thank you very much for the three of you for being here and, telling us, about the homeless from your points of view, because you have extensive experience.
And we encourage people to call us. We're available to come out and talk to groups. And if you know someone that is homeless or getting ready to be homeless, our number is 221-7887.
How about a number for the rescue mission?
227-2868.
Thank you again for joining us on Mental Health Matters here at Red River Radio.
Mental Health Matters is a program for informational purposes only. For all mental health questions, you should consult a physician or health professional. This show is available for download from redriverradio.org. Health Matters is a production of Red River Radio. The producer is Renee Moran, with production assistance provided by Wally Derleth. Production of Mental Health Matters is made possible in part by the Noel Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and also by the Gables at Spring Lake. Gamble's Guest Cares Assisted Living Community, located behind Spring Lake Guest Care Center on Line Avenue in Shreveport. Learn more at gambleguestcare.com. I'm Shelley Visconti, along with Dr. Mark Vegan. Thank you for listening, and good night.